Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedell filling in for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the September 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We spent a lot of time this week talking about the FIBA Men's Basketball World Cup going on in China this month, so let's get you updated on the news from the tournament. Senegal's squad was in action on Thursday in Shanghai. Mohamed Faye, who plays professionally in Serbia, scored 14 points, but it wasn't enough to overcome a strong Canadian team led by Corey Joseph of the Indiana Pacers. Joseph scored 24 points in an 82-60 win. The USA had a much easier time on Thursday compared to the last time it took the court against Turkey, and more than doubled Japan's score, winning 98-45. Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics scored 20 points, leading five American players in double figures. The star of Team USA's overtime win against Turkey earlier in the week, Kemba Walker, himself a new addition to the Celtics, had 15 points and 8 assists, while Joe Harris, Harrison Barnes, and Donovan Mitchell were the other Americans in double figures. Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz and a handful of other NBA players helped France to a 90-56 win over the Dominican Republic. Now, a number of teams have 3 wins in the tournament, and just to note, the first group stage of the tournament is coming to a close, and the initial 32 teams will be cut down to 16. At that point, there will be another group stage where only teams who have not played each other will face off. Then the final 8 will advance into a single elimination quarterfinals. So there's plenty of more basketball to come from China. We mentioned the changing of the seasons on Wednesday's show in our talk with Tim Hadzima from the World Marathon Majors. And with the changing of the seasons in North America comes the start of the American-style football season. The National Football League schedule kicks off tonight as two of the league's most historic teams take the field. That's the Green Bay Packers heading to Soldier Field in Chicago to play the Bears. Now, both of the teams are playoff contenders this year, so it should be a good game. Of course, one of the last times we talked NFL here on the Sunny Side of Sports, we mentioned the New England Patriots, based near Boston, who once again won the Super Bowl thanks to an outstanding defensive game plan and good play by their all-time great quarterback Tom Brady. The Patriots suppressed the upstart, exciting Los Angeles Rams in the Super Bowl. For a look ahead at the NFL season, we talked with a Boston sports expert who has joined us on the show a number of times. We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by an old colleague of mine, Sean Leahy, who's in Boston. He's the editor of The Athletic in Boston. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports, Sean.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Dan. Thank you for having me.
So, Sean, it seems like we always have you on when it's the start of a new season or the end of a season. We've talked with you about the New England Patriots heading into the Super Bowl in the second part of January or early February a lot of the time. And here we are. It's early September, and the NFL season is starting anew with the New England Patriots trying to defend their Super Bowl title, which they won about 6 months ago against the Los Angeles Rams. Sean, what do you think? Are the Patriots going to win the Super Bowl again this year?
Well, I think it's too early to say that, but I would pencil them down as you know, the team to beat. And, you know, they've been to 4 of the last 5 Super Bowls. They've won 3 of those. This is a team that knows what it's doing. And you know, I would expect them to be in position to, you know, claim a Super Bowl berth come January. I mean, it's hard to predict anything but that based on the way they've played this decade.
So for those of our listeners who don't really follow the ins and outs of the NFL season, the American Football League here in the United States, the players have been on the field since July, basically getting ready for the upcoming season. The first game is tonight. It's the two of the old-time teams in the NFL, two of the teams with the most history in the NFL, and that's the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears. That's the Thursday night game, and then the rest of the season schedule begins on Sunday. Sean, just for our listeners who might not really have a sense of how captivated the American sports fan is by the NFL, I've just been hearing walking up and down the hallways here at VOA, people talking about the upcoming NFL season. How big of a deal is it every year at the NFL?
Yeah, well, look, I think where you look, if you look at the top 25 rated TV shows at the end of this fall TV season, I'll bet you that 23 of them are NFL games. You know, people in America watch the NFL more than they watch pretty much anything else, you know. And the other two of those top 25 rated things, they might be college football games, you know, the NCAA division. So people call baseball America's pastime, but football is America's present passion, and that's true in you know, pretty much any city with a pro team, whether you're in New England where, you know, the fans like to root for Super Bowls and they get them, or you're in Cleveland where they haven't seen a Super Bowl ever, but, you know, every year they get a little hopeful that maybe this might be the year. You know, it's just people love to watch.
So we're joined by Sean Leahy, the editor of The Athletic in Boston, here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Sean, we had some interesting news in the NFL recently where a good young quarterback with a seemingly bright future ahead of him who had been dealing with some injuries, Andrew Luck, he was the Indianapolis Colts quarterback, wasn't sure if he was going to start the season on time, and a couple weekends ago he announced that he was retiring, not even 30 years old, some great seasons in the NFL. Then on the other side of the spectrum, you have a player like Tom Brady in New England, just this iconic player in the NFL. He's been a key member of the New England Patriots for pretty close to 20 years, and he's still playing in his 40s. But what does Andrew Luck's retirement announcement say about what the players think about their like their fallibility and their invincibility?
Well, you know, he's one of a group of several youngish players who are not afraid to walk away from the game. Rob Gronkowski, who's Tom Brady's teammate in New England, he did it earlier this year. I don't think he was 30 years old when he retired. These are players who are superstars, basically. I think it shows you that these guys, they, you know, football is not everything to them. I don't think that you can paint everybody in that same brush. I think some of these guys, like Brady, will play out the string until you're going to have to drag them off the field. You know, one good thing big thing to note about the difference between Brady and Luck, Brady has never had the type of injuries that Luck has had. Luck's been injured almost every year. He's got chronic pain. He's a guy who I think, you know, wants to see other parts of his life and other parts of the world. Brady is a guy who's driven by football, but most importantly there, he's not dealing with chronic pain that we know about that Andrew Luck is. Brady has played, you know, every single game in his career for the most part, except for, you know, one season when he busted his knee and one season when the NFL suspended him four games. He's a machine. But Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski, and there's a handful of other guys who have walked away from the game in their 20s. Football's a violent sport. These guys get beat up probably more than in, you know, certainly than in any other American sport. The history of this game is that players leave and a lot of them suffer debilitating injuries that hamper them until they're old men. There are concussion issues and the lingering effects of those. And you know, younger players learn about those things and they say, you know what, I've made enough money. And a lot of, you know, Luck, Gronkowski have both made many millions of dollars. They both see other opportunities ahead. and they both are confident enough to say, I'm okay. I'm done with football. And, you know, you can't do anything but say, hey, you know, that good luck to you guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're joined by Sean Leahy in Boston, the editor of The Athletic in Boston. It's an international series of sports-focused websites in North America and probably beyond even.
Sean, we're in the United Kingdom now, too.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of soccer coverage and non-traditional American sports coverage as well coming to The Athletic. I wanted to kind of wrap up our conversation on the start of the National Football League season, which begins tonight. It's the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers facing off before Sunday has a full slate of games. What are a couple of the key storylines that you're curious about heading into the season? We've got 17 weeks or so in front of us. What are you curious about as the season gets started?
Well, one is the Los Angeles Rams. You know, they were the Super Bowl runner-up last year. They were the best team in the league during the regular season. They were prolific offense. But how do they bounce back? No Super Bowl loser has gone on to win the Super Bowl in going on 30 years. And generally, there's a curse there, if you will. A lot of those Super Bowl losers don't even make the playoffs the next year. And they took a tough loss in Super Bowl 53 to New England. So how they bounce back and begin to re-identify their offensive side of the ball, that's pretty interesting. But I think the story everybody wants to know about is Cleveland, right?
That's me for sure. That's my hometown team, as many of our listeners know.
Baker Mayfield, the quarterback, he's a guy that seems easy to root for. Seems like a good teammate that you would want to play with. You know, he charged up that team when he took over midseason last year. The Cleveland Browns have been the worst team in football for 20 years now, right? If not longer. And that stems from the top, I think. It stems from really bad ownership and really bad decisions infecting the whole organization. And I think it's hard to get away from that. So, you know, I see a lot of people buying in on the Browns, and I think Baker Mayfield's an exciting guy, and they've added some talented receivers. Really, there's talent all over the roster. But the Browns know how to lose football games. That's their history. And I think there's a lot of institutional fumbling around that they're going to have to overcome. And, you know, I'll believe they're in the playoffs when I actually see.
Even going back to the 1980s, when I first became a football fan, the Browns knew how to lose important games. They never really won a big game. They were in some big games in 86 and 87 and 1989, and they never actually won. Kind of on the cusp of getting to the Super Bowl. I have friends of mine from Cleveland saying the Browns are going to win 12 or 13 games, and I'm just happy with the fact that we're going into the season thinking that the Browns have a chance to win all of the games that they're playing compared to recent years when it was clear they were just going to lose all the time. So I'm happy with that development.
Yeah, and look at the Browns. I believe they're coming to New England in October or November. It's one of the games that's circled on the calendar as you know, prime time, you know, can't miss this over the course of the season, and that hasn't been said about the Browns in a long time. Usually the Browns are the teams that you want to, you know, slip into the weakest spots on the TV calendar. But now, you know, the networks are seeking them out. Everybody wants to have a part of the Browns, and we'll see if they can live up to it.
That's Sean Leahy of The Athletic in Boston talking about the NFL season, which opens Thursday night in Chicago. The Patriots host the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday night. We'll hear more from Sean on Friday, as I couldn't let him off the phone without talking about the Boston Red Sox and Boston Celtics. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Let's turn now to tennis and the U.S. Open, which is heading into its final weekend at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, New York. Our VOA colleague Jim Stevenson is here now with a segment of his The Game Room podcast. The full show is available to listen to anytime at voanews.com. Jim gets us up to date with some of the women who are staying alive at the tournament.
Game, Ms. Williams.
As American Serena Williams closes in on the U.S. Open women's final, she had a scare.
Ankle, I don't know. I usually know if it's horrible early on. I mean, I had a really bad ankle sprain in January, so I was like, instantly, I'm like, no, this can't happen. I'm finally healthy. So far, I'm good.
Williams rolled her ankle during her round of 16 win over Petra Martic of Croatia before cruising past Wang Xiang of China in the quarterfinal round. Williams is seeking to match the 24 Grand Slam singles titles of all-time leader Margaret Court, the Australian whose major titles came between 1960 and 1973. But for Serena, she doesn't put herself on that level.
I would be pontificating to a level I wouldn't even know to say I'm a superstar. So honestly, I'm just Serena. I don't try to be anybody else. I don't try to be famous. I don't try to be anything, and I think when people meet me and they see me, they're, I think, almost shocked at how low-key and how average I am.
French Open champion Ash Barty of Australia was the women's second seed. While her singles run ended, she has a second chance, a doubles chance.
Oh, it's been incredible. I mean, it's a tough day at the office today, but it's been a year where we've hit our goals. Obviously, I would have loved to have kept going here in singles, but we've got an opportunity to do that in doubles. And knowing what it was like last year to be able to lift the trophy in doubles was really cool. And to be able to have another opportunity to do that now, still being able to play in doubles, is a bonus.
The top seed and defending U.S. Open women's champion is also out. Naomi Osaka of Japan fell to Belinda Bencic of Switzerland. The 7-5, 6-4 win put Bencic in her first major quarterfinal.
Before the match, I didn't think it was different. After the match, it definitely felt different. So I just came with the same mentality like I played her before and just really focused on the game and not about the hype or the occasion, the stadium and the round. After a match, it feels definitely different. It feels like this was the most important one.
Bencic is only 22, but she's been on the court for some time.
People always think I'm a little bit older than I actually am because I've been here since 16, 17, so I think definitely, you know, it was a good time. I learned so many things. I think it was, you know, everyone expected to go just up, but that's not how tennis goes. I think all true athletes have to overcome obstacles, injuries, just tough times. So I think it made me a stronger person, better player.
Thank you, Jim. We'll have more from Jim on Friday's show with an update on international golf. And we'll stick with more tennis coverage from my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten, after this brief VOA programming message.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Welcome back to the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Dan Friedel. We're joined now on the show by our colleague Gwen Uten, who's been doing a masterful job each day updating us on the action, which often goes late into the night in New York at the U.S. Open. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. With Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer out of the tournament, the path is clear of the familiar obstacles that Rafael Nadal usually needs to overcome on his way towards a title. And now the Spaniard is in the Final Four for the eighth time at Flushing Meadows. But he had to dig deep in his late-night quarterfinal match against Argentine Diego Schwartzman. Nadal not only had to fend off his relentless opponent, but also the oppressive humidity inside Arthur Ashe Stadium. But Nadal seemed to take it all in stride, and he was feeling good after the match.
Good, I'm feeling good. No, today was very humid, very humid day, very heavy day. I guess I had some cramps at the end of the second, and I take it some salt, and then it was over. But the body is in good shape, I think. No, not big problems, just, of course, now a little bit tired. Long day, 1:30, so need to go to sleep, but I really believe that I I'm going to be in good shape.
Standing at 5'7" tall, Diego Schwartzman is the shortest U.S. Open quarterfinalist in 25 years. But his game was strong, and he made Nadal work for every point during the three-set match. Nadal was asked if he thinks Schwartzman would be an even tougher opponent if he was taller in stature.
The word if is very dangerous. Because if I was his size, maybe I will adapt my game to that size. And if he was my size, he will adapt the game to this size. So I always try to speak in real terms. And he's one of the best players of the world. And when he's playing well, he's able to win against everybody. And tonight was, for me, a tough match. I'm very happy for the victory.
Nadal is now set to face heavy-hitting Italian Matteo Berrettini, who, in contrast to Schwartzman, stands at an imposing 6'5" tall. And Nadal says he doesn't expect an easy match.
Berrettini is having a great year. He's in semifinals, winning a lot of good matches. So what you can expect in a semifinals of a Grand Slam match? You can't expect an easy opponent. You can't expect an easy match. I really believe that if you want to win tournaments, you need to go through tough opponents, like I had against Marin, today against Diego. He was playing great during the whole event, and now another player that he's playing great. He's serving huge, big forehands, moving well.
On Wednesday, Berrettini defeated Frenchman Gaël Monfils in a marathon 5-set nail-biter that lasted just shy of 4 hours. The Italian is into the semifinals of a major for the first time in his career, and he told reporters he's living fully in the moment.
It's my first semis. I never won a match here in U.S. Open, so it's my second year in the men's draw, so I didn't expect that. I'm pretty... excited for that. Yeah, I was tired and I felt to just, leave myself in the court. And that's, if you're asking me if I'm not ready for the next match, I would say no. I mean, I would be ready, but you have to enjoy what you're doing. That's why.
All eyes will be on Nadal and Berrettini when they play their semifinal match on Friday. On the women's side, Swiss Belinda Bencic has also reached her first semifinals of a major, following her straight-set victory over Croatian Dana Vekic. And with fellow countrymen Roger Federer and Stan Wawrinka out of the tournament, it is now up to Bencic to win a title for Switzerland, which she says comes as a bit of a shock.
This is not a good thing. I'm not happy about this, actually. I'm kind of surprised, like I think everyone is. It would be really nice. The boys could also make it to semifinals, but I'm happy I can kind of do it for them and don't let them down.
Well, Bencic will try to win another match for her country on Friday when she'll face Bianca Andreescu, fresh off her 3-set win over Belgium's Elise Mertens. The 19-year-old Canadian has also entered her first Grand Slam semifinal, and she is now the first teenager to reach the U.S. Open semis in a decade. Andreescu says although she's put in the hard work to get to where she is, she never predicted her current run at the tournament.
It took a lot of hard work. The passion's always there, though. Even through the tough times, I tried to stay as optimistic as I can. If someone told me that I was going to be in the semifinals of the U.S. Open a year ago, I would say you're crazy. So I'm just really proud of myself with how I dealt injury-wise while I was injured. I kept that passion going.
Andreescu continues a strong run this year that includes titles from both Indian Wells and the Canadian Open tournaments, and she no doubt hopes to add a U.S. Open title to that list of victories. Stay tuned for more results from the U.S. Open. For now, I'll hand it back over to you, Dan.
Thank you, Gwen. And before we wrap up the show, just a quick note. On Friday's show, we'll have some updates from the FIBA Basketball World Cup. 4 African nations taking part on Friday. Angola and Tunisia play, along with the battle between Nigeria and Ivory Coast. And that wraps up the September 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Workinger and VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is Science in a Minute.
The sun's magnetic field changes over an 11-year period called a solar cycle, causing an ebb and flow of activity on the sun. At the beginning of a solar cycle called the solar minimum, the sun is relatively quiet, with very few sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections. As the solar cycle progresses, the sun becomes more active until reaching its peak, called the solar maximum, about midway through the cycle. Following the solar maximum, the sun's activity calms again until reaching another solar minimum 5 to 6 years later, when it repeats the cycle again. Now, German scientists say they have found evidence that suggests tidal forces produced by the alignment of Venus, Earth, and Jupiter with the Sun, which coincidentally also takes place about every 11 years, may be influencing the Sun's magnetic fields and playing a role in regulating the solar cycle. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the biggest threat
to President Yoweri Museveni's re-election in 2021, may be a 37-year-old musician. The future of Uganda on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News.